Hi, you're listening to the Chain Reaction podcast, all about supply chain advantage. This is the news roundup, all things impacting global supply chains this week. Stick around, stay tuned, and stay informed. In the news this week, the US Attorney General has basically accused Apple of locking out competitors and monopolizing the smartphone market in a landmark lawsuit against Apple. Apple says that its dominance comes from locking customers in, not from locking competitors out. In the financial markets this week, interest rates were held in both the United States and the United Kingdom. The Fed and the Bank of England have said they expect interest rates to come down in the next few months. In the United Kingdom, firms are bracing themselves for the hardening of rules with regard to importing goods from Europe. This is still post-Brexit fallout, and this is years after the agreements have been reached. So these are more news stories coming right up. The US Attorney General has basically accused Apple of locking out competitors and monopolizing the smartphone market in a landmark lawsuit against Apple. Apple says that its dominance comes from locking customers in, not from locking competitors out. But that's a bit strange, isn't it? If you lock customers in, aren't you locking competitors out? I would have thought so. The Attorney General, Merrick Garland, heads the Justice Department, and he's accused the company of employing an illegal strategy which is anti-competitive and hurts both consumers and developers. Apple puts barriers in the way to make it extremely difficult and costly for users and developers to venture outside the Apple ecosystem, according to Garland. Apple, of course, deny all these claims and say the lawsuit threatens its ability to create a superior product. The complaint also mentions the Apple Wallet, an app where users can pay for products online. They can store payment card information, their train passes, and even tickets. So again, it's another aspect of locking people into the system, as Apple would claim. But Apple's never really been a sharing company, and they've done this right down to the hardware itself, where they have chargers which are unique to Apple, and so you can't just use a USB-C. And that's another gripe with the European Union. They want Apple to use USB-C connectors so that users don't have to buy extra pieces of kit. And that makes good sense from a consumer point of view. But from an Apple company point of view, it will deny them revenue, of course, because they've done everything they can to make something unique. Well, have to wait and see how this plays out.
Japan Airlines and Korean Airlines have decided to purchase Airbus planes. Japan Airlines is to add 11 Airbus narrow-body jets for the first time, and Korean Air is ordering 33 Airbus wide-body A350s. Airlines are building capacity for long-haul jets in the post-pandemic travel boom. In all, Airbus has clinched orders of 65 jets from two of Boeing's key Asian customers, as the US aircraft manufacturer struggles with its quality issues since the blowout of the panel on the 737 MAX 9 for Alaskan Airways. It caused a real problem at Boeing, as we've discussed in the Chain Reaction podcast over the past few weeks. Airbus has been steadily growing its business of the A321neo after the various problems with the 737 9 MAX. There were two fatal crashes of the MAX in 2018 and 2019, and of course there was the Alaska Airlines flight, which is the subject of investigation in the United States. So one company's misery is another's gain. Aircraft manufacturing supply chains have been struggling to hit targets since the pandemic, but things appear to be improving, and the outlook is good for Airbus. Boeing has to get its house in order and get those quality issues sorted out if it's to compete effectively. Both the airlines making these purchases have avoided any statements about the problems of Boeing influencing their decision, and they both claim it's part of their long-term planning strategy.
to build capacity. Well, the social media platform Reddit made its New York stock debut this week, and on launch, it was 48% up on the initial price. Analysts are seeing this as an opportunity for other tech companies to come to market for public offerings because they think there's an appetite. Reddit hasn't made a profit since 2005, but investors are looking at the artificial intelligence potential, and buoyed by that, they decided to invest. Reddit has a data licensing deal with Google worth about $60 million. It mainly generates income from advertising, and that's where most of its income comes from. Will this be a game changer for Reddit? Will it now turn a profit? Well, we'll have to wait and see. Reddit, based in San Francisco, opened with a $47 price on the market on Thursday, after the initial IPO price had been set at $34. They ended trading on that day at $50. This values the company at the IPO as being worth $6.4 billion. They've raised about $748 million as a result of the IPO. Back in 2021, Reddit was valued at $10 billion. So the price seems to be on the sentiment of growth, that it will actually achieve growth figures and not necessarily on its past record as a loss-making company. Well, there are more vehicle recalls in the United States this week. Both Hyundai and Kia are recalling about 147,100 vehicles, and it's over a damaged charging unit. So these are EVs that are being recalled, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Hyundai has about 98,878 vehicles affected by this charging problem, mainly in its Ioniq and Genesis models, and Kia will recall 48,232 cars, impacting certain EV6 models. The integrated charging unit may become damaged and stop charging the 12-volt battery, and that can result in a loss of power, increasing the risk of a crash, according to the safety regulator. So here we are again, more EV car recalls, and the car industry has had a torrid time with vehicle recalls over the past year or two. So what's going on? It's technology pushed too quickly to market, probably, without thoroughly trialing. So they're basically trialing lots of things in the vehicles without testing whether they're robust enough to stand the challenge. But there does seem to be a serious quality problem and a quality issue with vehicle producers presently. And it's not just in vehicles, of course. We've talked about the quality problems of Boeing. And this brings me to talk about my episode coming up on revisiting quality and what we've forgotten and what we need to relearn, perhaps, about quality. And you might want to pick that up when it drops in the next week or two. Quality affects reputation, and all these companies are at risk if they don't get the quality systems in place. Now, in the United Kingdom, people are beginning to ask real questions about how energy companies are funding their investment. And is it through bills that they're charging to consumers, which are ramping up and turning out to be much higher than expected? Well, maybe that's the case. The UK's electricity network needs about £60 billion worth of upgrades to hit the government's decarbonisation targets by 2035. There are about 4,000 miles of undersea cables, 1,000 miles of power lines, including pylons, which are needed, according to the National Grid's electricity system operator. The investment would add between £20 to £30 a year for customer bills. The government said that the ESO plans were preliminary and yet to pass a robust planning process. ESO is the organisation which runs the electricity network. So this work has to be done to hit those targets, and it has to be done between 2030 and 2035. And it's on top of a previous £54 billion estimate for work taking place between now and 2030. So these are significant amounts of money in all, and with
the inflation that's likely to take place, these will probably end up costing more than £150 billion to upgrade the networks to run the grid. Well, this week inflation is down in the United Kingdom year on year, 3.4%. But this disguises a lot of things that aren't low in inflation. And of course, that's only the rate of increase at this particular time. The increases we've had over the past year that racked up the cost of everything, they're not coming down just because inflation's down at the moment. But those costs have actually hardened, and they remain. And what's also significant is that food prices are significantly higher than that annual rate for the basket of goods. And they don't look like coming down either. There are other factors at play. And as we move forward, of course, on the 30th of April, Brexit's back, because the rules and regulations on the importation of goods from Europe have changed as a result of Brexit, and not for the better. There's a lot more bureaucracy, a lot more documentation, and a lot more cost that's been added to a consignment of goods coming from Europe. And because that's so, that puts the cost of everything higher. So if you really wanted to tackle inflation, well, difficult to go back and change the decision immediately now, but Brexit was the real problem. Brexit introduced a great deal of inflation into the supply chain. And friction, of course, which means cost. Many importers of goods, particularly foodstuffs, have been grappling with the documentation since the rules were introduced, but they've been relaxed somewhat until they will now become firm on the 30th of April. And so the relaxed period has ended. And as that comes to an end, there are still about 30 to 40% of documents not compliant with the arrangements. And so if you think about that, that could hold up foodstuffs at the border, and they may not get entry into the country. And many exporters from Europe have already given up with sending foodstuffs to the United Kingdom for that very reason. And it's becoming harder to obtain the variety of goods that we used to expect to see on supermarket shelves. The Coal Chain Federation wrote to Steve Barclay, who is the DEFRA secretary, to raise the problem of the proposed border target operating model, which is planned to be rolled out on the 30th of April. It will jeopardise the UK's food supply chain and increase food prices for consumers. That's what they say. The Coal Chain Federation is the voice of the UK temperature controlled logistics industry. And if these full border checks are introduced without any easement, then it will have impact on temperature controlled plants and products of animal origin, including many types of meat and fish. A number of actions have been called for to mitigate the impacts for the food supply chain and for consumers, and to minimise the threat to the UK's food security. They say they'll expect many to stop exporting to the UK, particularly small artisan producers, and it could result in more than £1,000 added to the cost of one multi-consignment lorry entering the UK. And those costs will have to be passed on to consumers through higher prices. They also raise the issue of food wastage increasing as a result of the disruption and confusion regarding the paperwork, and they're asking for clarity. So the message couldn't be clearer. It's now up to Stephen Barclay and, of course, DEFRA. But don't hold your breath. The letter highlights four particular problems. The first one is groupage. Many member companies operate a groupage model, they say, which is a commitment to a four-hour response time. This is challenging but achievable. This just-in-time approach has supported the European Union food import for many years, ensuring fresh and wide varieties of food and plants that will now be classified in the BTOM medium risk group, which falls into the 24-hour pre-notification process. This remains a challenging scenario. This is what the Coal Chain Federation says. It means that they've actually made a highly efficient logistics process inefficient. That's what it means. And countries that are particularly at risk from this are France and the Netherlands,
where they often load trucks within a 24-hour period to send to the UK. So now if they have to get all the paperwork in advance, that's not going to happen. They go on to say that groupage operates through mixed loads at multiple temperatures from multiple suppliers with pickup points throughout Europe, and the 30th of April deadline looming, it remains unclear whether the government is able to factor in to its plans current cold chain operating models. Well, it's doubtful, isn't it? They haven't got an eye for detail, and they don't consult very widely on anything. They point out that one live example shows a medium-risk supplier placing an order with a UK haulage and warehouse firm at 9 a.m. UK time in the Netherlands. It's packed, picked, and travels to the UK by ferry, leaving Rotterdam at 2:30 in the afternoon, arriving in Felixstowe at 10 o'clock at night. Consignments that arrive at Dover are on an even tighter turnaround time, so the 24-hour rule won't be workable for thousands of consignments that this type of example represents. And the border control post closes at midnight. There's no 24/7 operating model at the port. The cold chain federation would like to see trusted trader pilot in operation, which means that they're able to support a faster turnaround. There's a great deal of detail in the letter. Whether the detail will be picked up, well, remains to be seen. They want clarity for all of this. It's going to disrupt a lot of businesses. It's going to be a self-inflicted wound yet again. Another post-Brexit tragedy in the making. Unless the government actually gets its act together and follows some of the advice of professionals in the industry. The general public's not unaware of all this background, of course, and the added costs that are being lumped on to businesses trying to get goods in from Europe. It's going to affect meatstuffs, anything that's live with the European health certificates, EHC certificates that are required for importation, and it's just another piece of friction in a supply chain. People work for years to try to improve supply chains, get times down, which is important, to remove the friction, and governments add to it. Brexit is already estimated to have cost food companies trading with the EU £170 million more than before. The Food and Drink Federation has estimated that it could cost £250 million to relabel food that says on it, not for the EU. That's food going to Northern Ireland to make sure it doesn't end up or is consumed back across the border in Southern Ireland, which is part of the EU. And they're considering taking legal action over this because it's just an extremely disruptive and costly way to deal with things. What's striking to me, of course, is that all the food bodies that talk about the problem that's been introduced by government policies in this area say that the government has failed to engage. Well, that seems to be the common trait of the government. They don't engage. They don't listen to people. And they don't follow sensible advice. They can't follow a sensible advice, of course, if they don't listen to it and don't engage. So that is a big problem. I mean, it's one of the things when we talk about lean thinking and lean approaches to business, as we have done in supply chains for many years, the first thing you've got to do is recognise the problem. And government doesn't seem to recognise the problem, or certainly not fast enough to act and change things. I think when you're heading for an iceberg, you should try and steer away, but that's not happening here. So we've got two major upheavals in the supply chain of food coming into the United Kingdom. The first one we discussed is the 30th of April deadline for food coming in from the EU. And the second one is this food labelling issue, all to do with the Northern Ireland situation post-Brexit. So if you thought that had all gone away and it was all resolved, think again. I'm thinking of making a boomerang with Brexit on it, because that's what Brexit seems to be. It just like a boomerang, it keeps coming back. And that's because nothing was ever sorted out properly in the first place. It's been completely shambolic. Now, one of the things that's happened in the past week in the United Kingdom is there have been a number of problems with payment systems in supermarkets, in Sainsbury's, Greggs, and others. and it appears that the systems went down and they were unable to process their online deliveries, and they had to resort to only cash transactions in stores. Very disruptive to business. And they must have lost a lot of sales. I don't know what the estimates are, but they lost a lot of sales as a result of the failure of a payment system. Seemed to be as a result of some software update on the night before the events happened to disrupt services on payment systems that didn't work the way it was intended to. The United Nations Conference on Trade and Development released its Global Trade Update this week. International trade is expected to rebound in 2024, according to UNCTAD, after experiencing declines for several quarters. The preliminary figures indicate a $1 trillion contraction in global trade in 2023, and they say this was driven primarily by subdued demand in developed nations and weaker trade within East Asia and Latin America. While trade in goods decreased during 2023, trade in services continued to grow, signalling resilience amidst challenging conditions, they say. So there are some regional dynamics taking place here, and they say that the statistics coming out of the Russian Federation exhibited notable volatility in trade statistics. Major economies, including China, plus 5% imports, and India, plus 5% exports, although they say it declined for the Russian Federation and the European Union. The developing and developed countries showed differences too. Developing countries experienced 4% decline, whilst the developed countries showed 6% decline. Trade between developing economies saw a steeper decline of about 7%, but the trends were reversed in the final quarter of 2023. Geopolitical tensions continued to impact bilateral trade flows, and the Russian Federation reduced its trade dependence on the European Union, while increasing its reliance on China. And trade between China and the United States decreased further in 2023. Regional trade between African economies went against the global trend and increased 6% in 2023, whereas intra-regional trade in East Asia, they say, was down 9% and in Latin America down 5%. So they were behind the global averages. So there's a mixed picture. They also make a statement about the decline in trade values, with the exceptions of such things as pharmaceuticals, transport equipment, largely due to increased demand for wide-body aircraft, and motor vehicles, which grew by 14%. And that was primarily driven by the demand for electric vehicles. The apparel, chemicals, and textiles industries saw significant declines in 2023, but most sectors came back in the fourth quarter, except apparel, where trade further contracted. Tourism and travel-related services were showing the strongest rebound, and they increased by almost 40% last year. So you can see why the demand for planes is going up, because there's more travel taking place around the globe, and they need more capacity. They say the prospects for 2024 suggest continued improvement in global trade and a moderation of global inflation. So they expect inflation to come under more control in the next year, this year, 2024. Growth forecasts are being revised. They say there'll be more demand for environmental goods. And what they classify as environmental goods are things like EVs, so cleaner, green, energy-driven vehicles. But they say that geopolitical tensions and supply chain disruptions persist and are likely to cause some problems. And we've had lots of them this year, with the issues in the Red Sea, with the Houthi attacks on ships, the Suez Canal problems, with ships having to go around the Cape Horn, southern tip of Africa, and of course the water levels in the Panama Canal. Just a couple of things that have caused problems in recent weeks and months. So I don't think there are any surprises in the UNCTAD report. It's very much as one would expect. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks for joining me here on the Chain Reaction Podcast, and I hope you've enjoyed the episode. Stay informed, get some insights, and build that competitive advantage. I'm Tony Hines, I'm signing off, and I'll see you next time in the Chain Reaction Podcast. Bye for now. I'm here to tell you about the Chain Reaction Podcast, all about supply chain advantage. I've been researching and writing about supply chains for over 25 years. I wrote my first book on supply chain strategies in the early 2000s. Each week we have special episodes on particular topics relating to supply chains, and we have a weekly news roundup every Saturday at 12 noon, all things impacting global supply chains in that week. So come and join us on the Chain Reaction Podcast. I look forward to seeing you there. I'm Tony Hines. I'm signing off. Bye for now.